And we are delighted to be joined by our first guest for the day. He is a man who knows all things La Liga, and I can tell you that personally, having spent a very pleasurable morning in Madrid with this man. He is from Goal.com, Mr. Ben Hayward, joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things Spanish football. Ben, how are you, mate? How was your weekend?
I'm very good, thanks, Ollie. Very good. Was it a morning? Was it a morning or was it a morning stroke afternoon? Wasn't it?
It was like yeah, it was
the
like
day of the cup final,
a brunch midday-ish kind of thing going on. Whatever it was, Ben, it flew by. That's what it definitely flew by.
Spanish morning, wasn't it?
Very much so. Late getting up and late to bed that night as well. That's for sure.
Exactly. Weekend great. Some great games, weren't there, this weekend?
There were some absolutely cracking games. Let's start with the first one on Saturday. Atletico Madrid just continuing to look absolutely fantastic this season at the moment. Really impressed by this. I mean, Diego Simeone's been saying that there is a possibility that that Atletico can push the top two in Spain. Is that really becoming a reality at this moment in time? I know it's early, but...
Yeah, it's hugely impressive, as you say, and it's going to be very, very interesting because obviously they made a similar start last season and kept it up for a long, long time, actually, when they were in second place for a long while behind Barcelona and then kind of dropped off a little bit towards the end, towards the end of the season. Mm. Whether they can do it this season, I'm still not sure. I mean, the first 11 is fantastic. Their squad, I still think it's a little bit short. And over the course of a long season, I think they may suffer. That's why they've had all this success in cup competitions, in one-off games. They're fantastic. To me, that's still going to be the thing. Can they sustain it over the course of a 38-game league season? Not sure. But, it's a great story and a brilliant start from them.
It's a great road to start riding as well if you're an Atletico Madrid fan. How impressed are you, by the way, that obviously he's a wonderful player, but how quickly David Villa has just slotted into this side and looks right at home playing alongside Costa in that front line?
He absolutely does. And I think he's really reveling, isn't he, in that, he's back to more of an orthodox position. Obviously at Barcelona, he had to kind of play second fiddle a little bit to Messi. He had to play mostly out on the left. You know, occasionally he'd play in his favourite position, but it was difficult. He was shifted around. He was on the bench. Then obviously the first season was great. Then he had the injury. Strikers breed on confidence, And I think playing in his usual position, he feels much more comfortable. And as you say, slotted right in there. He says he's not a replacement for Falcao, but certainly Atletico fans are very happy with how he's doing at the moment.
Does it just highlight maybe how underrated he was at Barcelona? Because Villa's been successful wherever he's played. It doesn't matter what system, he's always scoring goals.
That's right. Exactly as you say. I mean, it's crazy to talk of the all-time top scorer in the history of the Spanish national team being underrated. But perhaps at Barcelona, after he came back from injury, but he wasn't really getting the games, and perhaps you thought, in training maybe he wasn't looking so sharp, and you thought maybe he's on the way down, he's on the decline, but certainly he's been a breath of fresh air at Atletico, and I think at this stage of his career, I think it was a great move. I think he made the right decision. He wants to play football, and that he's doing that week in, week out now. Atletico reaping the results.
Now, elsewhere, obviously in the capital city, Real Madrid have finished the hula of Gareth Bale being signed for the world record fee has kind of died down. And yes, we had Cristiano Ronaldo re-signing a new contract with Madrid over £250,000 a week after tax. That's all very nice and good, but on the pitch, it wasn't too easy against Villarreal on the weekend. Ben, where did Madrid go wrong in trying to tackle the newly promoted side?
Well, I thought Villarreal, to start with, was fantastic. I thought they deserve a lot of credit. The way they moved the ball around, one, that they've got a lot of great technical ability in their team. Their pressing was fantastic. And it's so nice to see Villarreal back in La Liga and playing the kind of football that we associate with them. They were a team that played nice football when they were in La Liga. Obviously, they had that poor season and they were relegated, which was a big surprise. And now they're back. Obviously, they lost a few of their players when they went down, but they're still playing extraordinary football, and it's a great start. But for me, they could be the surprise team this season. And, you know, they really they had Madrid on the ropes, didn't they, for long periods. And I think the goal that Bale scored came as a big sort of timely boost for Madrid, because had Villarreal scored a second, I'm not sure we would have seen Madrid come back in that one.
When you say surprise, Ben, how much of a surprise do you mean? Do you mean Europe or do you mean top half? What are we talking here?
I mean, we'll see. I mean, if they play as they did the other day, but top four, top six, why not? They've got a lot of very good players. They've made a wonderful start. And, I think there's an opportunity for a team like Villarreal, like Betis, as we saw Real Sociedad last season, maybe to come in fourth or certainly to make the top six. It'd be a great story.
It would be a wonderful story indeed. A wonderful first game for Gareth Bale in terms of just maybe relieving the pressure, scoring early. It will stop people saying, is he on a goal drought already at Real Madrid? But this is a costly draw, really, for Real Madrid. In terms of the money that they've spent recently on players, not just Gareth Bale, but Madrid would have been expecting to get past Villarreal, wouldn't they? Not this weekend?
I think they would have expected to win that fixture, but as it turns out, given the way that the match went, in the end, a point is probably it's probably a decent result there. And I think it was very important for Bale to score that goal. He didn't play well for me. Obviously, he's lacking a bit of fitness. He's coming off an injury. It was his first game, and had he not scored the goal, which at the end of the day was basically a tap-in, wasn't it? But it takes the pressure off a little bit after what wasn't a great performance. But you say, okay, but he scored. And that definitely is going to help him. It's going to take the pressure off a little bit. But I still think Madrid are finding their feet a little bit under Carlo Ancelotti.
I was going to say, are we still seeing them just trying to get his system, his style embedded into this Madrid team? Because aside from the Bilbao result, they've been close and reasonably cagey-ish games at points for Los Blancos.
I think that's right. I think we are. And I think actually they were missing a little bit of muscle in midfield. I think they're missing Xabi Alonso. Obviously, he's still out with he had an operation in the summer. I think Iaramendi showed some nice touches, showed a bit of his quality, but I don't think he's fully fit either. And I think the midfield was a little bit lightweight. So I think they need to find the balance there, particularly away from home. Obviously, at home, they're going to have a lot more of the possession. It's not going to be so much of an issue. But I think perhaps missing a little bit of physical presence in midfield at the moment.
Is that one of the problems of buying young as well, Ben? They brought in Isco Ilaramendi, and obviously Bale's not exactly old and decrepit yet in terms of his age. Is that Madrid will still have to wait on occasion for some of these youngsters to maybe get up to pace?
It's an interesting point. I think certainly with Bale. Bale's 24 now, and I think more than his age, I think it's a question of him adapting to a new league and new surroundings, learning a bit of the language. I think all of that's going to help. So I don't think his age is a concern. Isco is very young still, but, he's been outstanding this season. Okay, on Saturday, it wasn't his best game, but he's already scored three goals for Madrid. He's got an assist. He's been outstanding, and he's going to get better and better. In terms of Iaramendi, it's an area of the pitch where actually they're quite well off, aren't they? If you look, they've got Xabi Alonso, they've got Khedira, Modric. Isco's been playing in there too. So he's not going to be, that was his first game. He's not going to be first choice too often, I'd say, at the moment. And obviously he's got legal experience. So I don't think it's too much of a big issue. I think the greater issue for Madrid is kind of adapting to Ancelotti's tactics. I still think they're finding their feet.
And obviously, nice for Gareth Bale not to be starting his first game for Madrid at left back, as some people were saying was a possibility leading into the weekend. Barca as well, leaving it very, very late indeed to get themselves a 3-2 win against a Sevilla side that struggled. Barca too haven't been trip the lights fantastic, Ben, starting in these first four games. What do you see the problems, if any, with this Barca side at the moment?
It's Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we saw obviously at Valencia, when obviously the first league game of the season, the 7-0 stroll, wasn't it, against Levante? Then Messi was out for a little while. Neymar's still kind of adjusting, you know, actually doing better every game that we've seen him, and he's been good. You know, I don't think that they've got too many problems in attack. They seem to be playing well, but the defence remains a slight concern. You know, obviously they went to Valencia and they scored 3 times, and then Postiga hit a double, and then suddenly it's 3-2, and you know, comfortable, but you know, another goal, and that's points dropped, and the same thing happened, you know, at the weekend. Obviously, we saw them take 2-0 lead against Sevilla, and they were very comfortable. And then you know, obviously they let Sevilla back in it. You know, some of the defending for me wasn't good enough. You know, still they were, you know, for the first goal they were stretched a little bit too easily, I thought. The second goal, I can't remember, the name of the scorer escapes me at the moment. He was left all alone to hit that equaliser from the corner.
And Koke.
You know, obviously, sorry, go ahead.
Koke, wasn't it? Coke, sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Coke, yeah. You know, in the end, obviously they went and scored the winner late, deep into added time, right at the death there. Yeah, perhaps a little bit lucky because there was a disallowed goal which looked like it was a foul, but you know that some decisions don't always go your way. So certainly they're not completely convincing, and it's interesting because the big two have got new projects underway. And obviously, if they do start to drop points, then that's going to be good news for Atletico, who are obviously in their third season now under Simeone, and they might just be able to take advantage.
Is it worrying at all, the back four, especially for Barca, but for both these sides going to Champions League action? Barca taking on a very young, classically as pleasing on the eye Ajax side that play nice football, and Madrid all going all the way to Turkey to take on Galatasaray that obviously have enough power and force going up front to cause problems for a back four that isn't looking quite right, especially with the problems with injuries with the fullbacks.
Well, we saw Madrid against Galatasaray last season in the Champions League in the quarterfinals, wasn't it? And they, you know, they had a scare in that match, you know, and Galatasaray had them on the ropes for a while, and you know, scored a couple of goals, and you know, it was game on, and you know, if the way Madrid are playing, I don't know, I wouldn't be too confident. It's going to be a difficult game for them going to Turkey and to get a result. I certainly think that they're struggling a little bit and to find the right balance in defence and in midfield as well. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Ancelotti opt for a bit more of a defensive formation in that game.
What about Atletico this season in the Champions League? We've seen obviously a side like Dortmund focus far more on the league than the Champions League, and we've seen it kind of work the other way as well. And their success came in the Champions League when they neglected the league slightly. Will Atletico, with the smaller squad that they have, with the lack of depth that they have, will they be just treating the Champions League with a kind of a pinch of salt or as a nice bonus, or will they be really gunning for it as well?
I think they'll be going for it. I think it's the Champions League. I think you have to prioritise that. But yeah, certainly, as you say, the small squad that we mentioned, that's going to be difficult for them to compete in both competitions. The one thing that perhaps is going to help them is obviously the Europa League was perhaps an unwanted distraction in the end last season. With that allowed them to concentrate, obviously, on the league and on the Copa del Rey when they got to the final and they won it. But this season, I certainly think the Champions League is too big a competition to not take seriously. So it's going to be interesting to see how that develops.
It will be a very interesting side to watch, Atletico Madrid. Very entertaining side as well. Just quickly on Sunday's games, we saw Betis beat Valencia in a very nice little 3-1 win for Betis. Their first win of the season. Considering how they finished last year, you surprised it's taken them this long to finally get 3 points in the bag, if you will?
I'm a little surprised, actually, because certainly they were one of the teams I tipped at the beginning of the season to do really well, and they played really nice football. They've had a difficult, you know, fixtures to start the season with, They were obviously unlucky to lose to Madrid in that first game at the Bernabeu. You know, they could easily have got a point. They could even have won it. They had good chances to go 2-0 up, which they didn't take. And you know, something key with Betis is that obviously they lost Beñat, but I think they got perhaps the bargain in the summer in signing Verdú on a free transfer as his replacement. And he's, for me, a great player. And I think, I'm surprised it's taken me this long, but I think they'll kick on from that now, and I think they'll go on to do very well this season.
What about Cedric as well? He's been, we've seen glimpses of him. We've seen kind of glimmers of this brilliance of him on the ball, and especially running at defenders with it as well. He looks like a real entertaining character to have in La Liga.
Very exciting, yeah, very exciting, very very intense player, and he's done really, really well. But for me, one of the best teams to watch in La Liga, and you never quite know what you're going to get with them, do you? So it's always a joy to watch Betis, and I've got a lot of time for their coach. I think they've backed him, and they're kind of reaping the rewards for that now too.
We will be keeping an eye on them and an eye on Real Sociedad as well. Can't believe we almost left them out of the Champions League discussion. They take on Shakhtar Donetsk on tomorrow night as well. And it's nice, I guess, for Sociedad to be back in the big time. It's been so long since they've been in Champions League football.
It's been a long, long time, and it's a great story, isn't it? I mean, obviously they came second, and they almost won La Liga, didn't they, back in 2002, 2003. And they finished just behind Real Madrid, just pipped it in the end. It's been a long time, obviously. They spent some time in Segunda, financial problems and what have you. And then they kind of opted for a bit of a change of philosophy and built up the youth system, the cantera. And they've developed some great players. And they also seem to have a fantastic scouting system as well. They've got, you know, they seem to find some real gems. I mean, Vela, obviously we knew about, but he's been fantastic for them. And Griezmann is another very exciting player. Seferovic as well, they got from Fiorentina, has slotted in there. He's been very good. So, they're doing a lot of things right, and they're really great to watch. So that's going to be exciting as well.
It's a tough ask against Shakhtar, but can Sociedad do it on Tuesday night? We will find out. Ben, it's an absolute pleasure to catch up with you and have a chat about all things Spanish football, mate. It's been a little bit too long once again since we last spoke to you, but we will be back in contact with you very soon indeed to talk more about La Liga as the season continues, my man.
Brilliant, Ali. I look forward to it.
Cheers, Ben. Thanks very much for joining us. Take care and have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Cheers, mate. Ben Hayward there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things La Liga. And, of course, the Champions League is almost upon us tomorrow night. It all kicks off. United, Leverkusen, Sociedad take on Shakhtar, Copenhagen, Juve, Gala against Madrid, Bayern Munich take on Moscow, Victoria Pilsen take on Manchester City, Olympiacos, PSG, and Benfica, Anderlecht. We're talking about those groups, actually. And, you know, apart from United, Bayern, Leverkusen, and... you know, Galatasaray, Real Madrid. Tomorrow night, there isn't anything that just leaps off the page and makes you think, God, I'm going to have to make sure I set the recording for that one. Similarly, I mean, you know, on Wednesday night too, we'll be talking about the Champions League a little later on in the show. We do, of course, have some English football to get through today. We have heard from Paul Lambert. We've heard from Karim El-Hamadi about their game against Newcastle. Now we're going to hear from a man who is an expert as well on all things North Eastern football news. He joins us today, as he's joined us maybe a few weeks ago, actually, was the last time we had him on. But it's always a pleasure to talk to this guy about English football. Joining me on the line right now, Mr. Christian Hennage here on World Football Daily. Christian, how are you, mate? It's a pleasure to have you back on the show again. Hope it was a good weekend, man.
I'm very good, thanks, mate. How are you?
I'm very well. Very well indeed. Both you and I got to share the North East football experience this weekend. You were, of course, up watching Sunderland against Arsenal, and... before we get into Arsenal and how good they looked, how bad is it looking for Sunderland? Is Paolo Di Canio going to be the first managerial casualty if things carry on this way?
There's every chance. I think, again, it was difficult on Saturday because there was a fairly hefty decision that didn't go their way with Martin Atkinson choosing, firstly, to stop the play when Jozy Altidore was set to score, and then subsequently not sending Bakary Sagna off for... what was it? A wrestling type hold on the edge of the box. And it changed the complexion of the game. And unfortunately for Sunderland, Arsenal scored not too long after it. And it just completely took all of the wind from their sails. But I mean, the difficulty is, I think, prior to that, after the equalised with Craig Gardner, there was a real kind of whip of storm, and you thought, oh, this could very much be an Arsenal capitulation again. There was definitely just elements of deja vu there that did suggest that there are still defensive frailties at that club.
When you talk about the incident with Altidore, and rightfully so, should have been allowed to continue. Altidore taking the ball past Sanya in the end and putting it in the back of the net. Di Canio's reaction, though, again, it doesn't show stability and that level-headedness. I know we all know he doesn't have it at the best of times, but really, to get himself sent to the stands and whatnot, it's not what you want to see when you're at a club and you're a fan at a club watching Sunderland at the moment, as they're already struggling to start this season.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. There was just the early throes of conjecture about that from some Sunderland fans on Saturday that, hang on, you know, it seems like he's putting himself the centre of attention. Now, whether that's to deflect blame from his players, I'm unsure if he's sort of that complex a thinker. I think that he perhaps thinks without forethought a lot of the time, and you could argue that that same naivety stems into his tactics. Playing two in midfield against Arsenal with a really talented midfield three in there. It's something that I think he'll always have. I don't think you can really take it out of him, and I think he would not compromise. There is no ifs, ands or buts about that. He's going to act that way, and he's going to, more importantly, try and use humour to diffuse the tension. I mean, he came in on Saturday with a smile on his face, which I guess is kind of perplexing given the result and the situation they find themselves this early on in the season. But that's just him. He's someone a bit like Martin O'Neill in that sense, who will try and use dry humour or, you know, a funny quip to diffuse the tension around the situation. I think if there's one thing that seems to be bothering Sunderland fans most about him is the unpredictability and the lack of ability to read into him and what he's doing. The situation with Cabral, the midfielder they signed from Basel, kind of typifies that. He starts the season, does very well, and then on Saturday, Di Canio says that he's fourth choice and he doesn't think he's aggressive enough. It's something that I think only time will truly take to decipher what is Di Canio, what is his man management style. But at the minute, it's very inconsistent.
And it would have been nice as well for Jose Altidore to pick up that goal. He's a player that a lot's expected of him with that scoring streak that he had in Holland. Wonderful forward for the US men's national team as well. But always, a lot of the time, sorry, American players do tend to struggle in the Premier League. Are you seeing enough from Altidore, though, that we shouldn't be worried yet?
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot from him. I think he's frustrated. And it does kind of just glimmer through in his body language a lot. The Capital One Cup tie against MK Dons, I remember tweeting at the time that he did look like a man possessed at points, and you know, he had a small tête-à-tête with one of the defenders, and he said some words that I can't repeat at this time of day, unfortunately. And he just had this swagger about him that he was annoyed, and he was able to channel that into the goal that he got that evening. The problem is that really he's not getting chances. At Sunderland, he's getting scraps to feed on, and I think for him it's a large period of adjustment. If you compare it to kind of RZ, where things were not easier for him but they were more conducive to his skills and abilities, I think at the minute he's being asked to do a lot of the things that, while you might think someone with his frame is able to do, he's not entirely comfortable with. Holding it up, kind of playing as the target man, forced to battle and bruise, I think he's a lot more refined than that, and he's not being given chance to show that in and around the box. And it's kind of forcing him to take pop shots from distance. He brought a decent save out of Szczesny on Saturday, but that was really what I would consider the best chance that he got, bar the infamous Sanya one.
They did take on an Arsenal side that have been buoyed, if you will, by this signing of Mesut Ozil. And Ozil starting, if this is starting how he means to go on, the Premier League defences are going to be very worried indeed. And Aaron Ramsey as well, starting this season, if he can maintain this sort of form, it's going to be a very tough person to throw out of this midfield when everybody gets back healthy and Wenger needs to start making choices.
Yeah, it's a selection dilemma, I think, is never a bad thing. It's always nice to have players who are playing in form, particularly Ramsey, because I thought towards the end of last season the questions were just starting to creep up on him. Is he ever going to achieve that potential that we saw at Cardiff? The injury obviously stagnated him a little bit and slowed him down, as you would completely understand. But you have to remove that from your thought process and think, well, it's whether he's going to be good enough is the most, you know, pertinent concern. Ozil was wonderful. For the first 45 minutes up to the hour mark, I'd say he was the best player on the pitch. Every pass was considered. Sunderland at times were very deep and encamped, and he didn't seem to panic. He seemed incredibly composed on the ball and just waited for the moment to strike when he could slide it through a few players, you know, into Theo Walcott, who really, I think, should have had two goals by the end of that game at least, and for Giroud for the first. It was a very impressive performance on a very big stage, and in the knowledge that actually he'd been sick for most of the week. And, you know, Wenger, I think he tempered his praise. You know, he said, much like the team, he was good for the first 60 minutes and then he kind of tailed off a little bit. But I think you should expect that, given that, you know, he's really not 100% fit, which is probably the biggest compliment you can give him.
Now, Christian, Arsenal have the big Champions League games coming up this Wednesday against Marseille. Does the signing of Ozil, in your opinion, make this group of death a little easier? Does it really boost them that much, or is it still going to be an absolute slog against Marseille, Napoli and Borussia Dortmund in Europe?
I think, Napoli and Borussia Dortmund, their talents are very much on display for everyone to see. We know the threats that are present there. With Marseille, I think the Stade Vélodrome is perhaps one of the most difficult grounds to go to in Europe, just because of the atmosphere they can cultivate there. And I also quite like what Marseille are trying to do. They're looking to shift towards a more younger core. You've got Dimitri Payet there, who they got from Lille. He started quite well in the league. Florian Thauvin, you know, dubbed the new Ben Arthur, perhaps his impetuous attitude as much as his talent, given that he, you know, refused to play for Lille after joining them in January. But they're all talented individuals, and I would be very wary if I was an Arsenal fan of seeing Marseille as the easy marks in this group, because they're really not. They present a different kind of problem. I mean, you could argue that, you know, Napoli's ground is just as difficult to go to, but I think they almost represent a problem that doesn't appear to show itself on superficial view, and you have to really focus on it. And just having one player like that will not rectify every problem that's present at the club. As I said, the defence is still a little bit shaky to me, and I think it was kind of typified by the lead-up to Sunderland's goal and the fact that Johnson was gifted just so much space in the penalty box.
Now, Christian, let's talk about the other side in the northeast. Let's talk about Newcastle United, although I'm sure there'll be some Middlesbrough fans that won't like me saying that at all. But the other Premier League side, really, in the northeast, in Newcastle, took on Aston Villa this weekend, were excellent, absolutely excellent from what I saw of the game. And Hatem Ben Arfa, just absolutely incredible. There was a lot of murmurings around the ground after the game that Ben Arfa, on those sorts of performances, can be as held in as high regard as players like Luis Suarez in the Premier League. You're somebody who obviously has followed Newcastle a lot and knows Hatem Ben Arfa very well as a player. Do you agree with that, that were it not for the injury problems that he's had in his career, he could be considered in higher stature as players like Suarez in the Premier League?
Yeah, I think if you remove that unfortunate leg break and then perhaps his own attitude when he was in France, I think he would be there. He was considered the most talented member of the 1987 generation, and I think if you watch him with the ball at his feet, you can completely see why. The difficulty is that the other members of that generation, by and large, Nasri, Benzema, etc., they're at really big clubs. They're at Madrid and Manchester City, respectively. He's not at that tier of club. And if he's ever going to fulfil that potential, it's going to have to come at one of those clubs, because I don't see Newcastle rising into that echelon of world football, unfortunately. He's a wonderfully gifted player. I think anyone who's got a drink named after him this quickly, the Hatem Bomb, which I can tell you contains Jägermeister and Newcastle Brown Ale, for anyone who wants to be dapper enough to try it. I know. don't take that one on a work night, would be my advice.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I think, in a weird way, what I like most about him is just his childlike demeanour in interviews and such. Like, he's very onomatopoeic, and maybe it's a lack of English or what have you, but there's a real sense of he feels happy here, and he's touched on that a lot. And amazingly, you know, he's worked with some top coaches, yet it seems Alan Pardew's got the balance of him. I remember him saying when he first had his really top period for Newcastle, when they finished fifth, he said, you know, it's about managing Hatem in a very considered way. When he has the ball, it's his world. He can do what he wants. But when he doesn't have the ball, that's when he's in my world. And by that he meant, you know, having to defend, having to track back, contribute on both fronts. Mm. And you've seen that with him, because he wasn't always the one chasing back. Whereas now he does speak with almost the thought of the team. He said it so much on Saturday, you know, I'm proud of the team, the way we played. And it was all about the rest of the guys. It was never a narcissistic indulgence on how brilliant he was.
Does that show that maturity is finally coming in then with Ben Arfa? Because you mentioned just a minute ago or so that there was that kind of immaturity to his side. In the same way that we've seen that immaturity from a number of the French players from that kind of era, that generation. At 26 now, are we finally seeing him grow up and get his head down to really come and be the best footballer he can be?
Well, it's funny you talk about the leg break. You know, I'm a great believer that everything has to happen for a reason. And I think, listening to him, he said himself, you know, that leg break put a lot of things in perspective for me, that, you know, I've only got so long in this career, and if I want to achieve my potential, I'm going to have to work at it. And again, you know, we've all seen players blessed with wonderful skill who, due to lack of work ethic or, you know, application, didn't achieve their potential. And he skirted that for a long time. But I think, yeah, you're seeing that maturity in part due to that leg break, in part due to the fact that I wouldn't say he faced his own mortality, but he realized that nothing is given in this world, irrespective of how good you are with the ball between your feet. And it's something that is really benefiting Newcastle, more so given they only paid £5 million to bring him in from Marseille. And I think, while perhaps he's not at the level of Suarez, he's certainly at the level of importance in relation to Newcastle's play that Suarez has been to Liverpool in the past. I think you could easily command 3 and 4 times that fee for him now, and perhaps even more if he can just gain the consistency, because that's the only thing that I think is lacking from his game at present. And that will only take time. And I think if there's one kind of, you know, thing that Newcastle fans can clutch to, is that in achieving that consistency, he's going to do it with them, and he's going to give you some more truly sublime moments that, you know, will build a rich tapestry that is his career at Newcastle.
Is that something Newcastle fans should maybe worry about? Ben Arfa starting to attract too much attention, and other clubs starting to lurk around? Because, as you say, Newcastle don't look like they're going to break into that upper echelon of the Premier League anytime soon, and there might be some of those sides that are trying to break into it that might be looking at Ben Arfa and thinking, this is somebody we really want to be racing down our right flank.
It's unfortunate, of course it is, but I think it's better to live, you know, at least sampling these wonderful players than maintaining mediocrity and not. There was talk from people, you know, I know who are a little bit closer to him, that Tottenham looked at him, that Liverpool looked at him, but nothing seemed to come to fruition, which I think is the story of Newcastle summer. No real speculation on their players, bar perhaps Kabay, albeit briefly. No bids really came to fruition. A lot of teams seem to avoid the Newcastle squad, which I don't think will always be the case. I think, again, as he starts to establish himself, yeah, teams are going to look at him. That's the unfortunate consequence of having such a wonderfully talented player. And it's also the cycle of life that is the Mike Ashley transfer strategy. He buys them low. He buys them, as Jean-Michel Aulas at Lyon said, you buy a player with problems and help them overcome those problems. Ben Arfa had those problems, and Newcastle have done everything they can to help get him over those problems. When he had his broken leg, you know, the Derek Lambias, the managing director, and Mike Ashley paid him visits. There was absolute droves of cards from Newcastle fans and such like, and that really forged a bond, and that helped him to mature a bit. And like I say, the policy has to come to an end at some point, and the player has to be sold for a profit for the Mike Ashley approach to continue to fund itself. That's how he operates, buy low, sell high. And unfortunately, you would target him as one of the most likely candidates, just given how he's performing.
Now, Christian, we do have a game in the Premier League tonight as well before we get into the Champions League action. Just very briefly indeed, Brendan Rodgers going back to Swansea again to take on his old side with his Liverpool squad. Liverpool perfect so far this season, albeit 1-0 wins. Daniel Sturridge may be injured for tonight. How do Liverpool go about it if Sturridge isn't available for Brendan Rodgers this evening?
I think the way he's bought players, they can go about it very much the same way. A lot of the players he's purchased have fit a similar criteria of skills and abilities, and so interchanging them shouldn't be that difficult. And that, for that reason, I don't see a huge change if Sturridge is unavailable. Whether they'll get another 1-0 victory, I'm not entirely sure, because I think Swansea have been a little bit unfortunate with the fixtures they've been given early on, because it's cultivated a bit of a misnomer that they're struggling. I don't think they're struggling at all. I think they're ready to unleash themselves, and if they ever needed more motivation, the fact Brendan Rodgers is coming back, the fact that he left fairly quickly at the first real good offer, you could argue, is a huge motivation to prove him wrong. And as I heard John Joe Shelby say recently, you know, you find me a player who isn't excited about playing against his former club and they're lying. And I think he's completely right. And that will apply in the same way to those Swansea players who want to show Brendan Rodgers what he missed by leaving.
It will be a tense affair in Wales tonight as Liverpool take on Swansea. We'll be watching it here on World Football Daily and talking about it tomorrow. Christian, though, it's an absolute pleasure to have had you on the show today, mate. We always appreciate you coming on and giving us the lowdown, especially on Sunderland and Newcastle. And we look forward to catching up with you very, well, not very soon indeed. I was about to say very later on, but that just won't work at all. Very soon indeed, Christian, on all things Premier League football once again, mate.
Thanks, mate. Absolute pleasure.
Cheers, boss. Thanks for joining us. Big thanks there to Christian for joining us here on WFD. A massive show just gets even bigger because the big dog is here on the line with